Hey, Liam, can you hear me all right?
Yes, sir. I hear you fine.
All right. Okay. So let me tell you where I am right now. I'm in front of a whole bunch of students in a class taught by Professor Frank Baumgartner. This is a class on the death penalty. And we're just going to talk for a little bit about until you have to go, which will be in about 15 minutes.
I'm going to let you know real quick, right, before we start, right, that I did get prior approval from the officer that I could talk for maybe, you know, 10 or 15 minutes more after this call. So just give me the heads up.
Oh, that's great. Okay, thank you. Class just started and I haven't told people what's going on, but generally at, 1:45 is the count, is that right?
Yeah, 1:45 is usually count. So we got to lock in. They start the actual count at 2 o'clock, but, you know, they secure all the door to lock in at 1:45. But like I said, I just spoke to the officer and got prior approval if I could stay out a few more minutes before 2 o'clock. She gave me the okay.
Okay, that's great. So, okay, so... actually, could I just ask, because he, Aleem, can't see, can people just say hi, say hello?
Hi.
Okay, so, yeah, it's a lot of people.
Yeah, it's like a stadium, it sounds like.
Yeah, it is. It is basically a stadium. The class enrolls about 360 students, so, you're talking to a lot of UNC students right now. I just want to dive right in. Can you introduce yourself, however you like to introduce yourself, and then we'll talk about your music, the album, and why you're doing what you're doing.
Okay, sure. Yeah, so my name is Aleem. You know, I wear many different hats, so I got, you know, a few different AKAs. I'm known as Rome Alone as an MC. I'm on death row here at Central Prison. I've been in prison for now 29 years. And, you know, as Mark mentioned, you know, I have an album coming out. I'm also author with a published book called Crimson Letters that I co-authored with Jesse Castillo and three other guys here on death row. And, you know, another book that, you know, is in the process as well.
Right.
Called Rap and Redemption on death row.
Yes, so Liam and I are working on a book together. It's going to be a memoir of Liam's time on death row, but particularly the last few years and his project, his music project, and that's going to be coming out with UNC Press probably sometime next year. We're working on it right now. So Liam, could you share a little bit about your musical background and why you are using your music to speak out right now?
Yeah, so I've been writing rhymes since I was 13. So for, you know, those who don't know, that means back in 1986, I first started writing rhymes. And that's one of the, you know, few things, if not one of the only things that I've been able to have as consistent throughout my life. It was something I was able to do, you know, before I became in prison and as well as continuing since I've been in prison. You know, starting off, of course, it was just rudimentary, but since I've been in prison is that I just kind of found, you know, writing rhymes as being therapeutic for me. I ended up doing about 10 years in solitary confinement, went through a great deal of depression and stress, and, you know, had a lot of things that, you know, I struggled from, you know, personally, and just writing rhymes became a creative way of me to articulate and express myself and talk about things that I just didn't have either the courage or, you know, the capability of talking out to other people about. So, you know, rhyming just became therapeutic for me. And throughout the course of the years, as you know, I've grown, you know, mentally as well as spiritually. I'm Muslim. That's also a part of the intro, is that, you know, I'm very deeply rooted in my faith. And there's a verse in the Quran that, you know, says essentially that, you know, to take a life is like killing all of mankind, but to save a life is like saving all of mankind. And, you know, throughout my imprisonment here is that, you know, I came to the realization that there have been people on death row that are actually innocent. There's been at least six people here on North Carolina's death row that have been exonerated because they were wrongfully convicted and later found to be innocent, the most recent being Henry McCollum in 2014. And, you know, that just had a huge impact on me when I realized that some of the people that were around me were actually innocent. And then I was dumbfounded to find that one of my best friends here was also innocent. So I wanted to use what I was doing, you know, artistically with my music to try to generate some attention to people that are behind the walls that may not have any opportunity or way to generate attention for themselves. So that became, you know, kind of my inspiration, my drive, my motivation to record music, to release it publicly, and, you know, hopefully be able to generate attention therefrom, and then, you know, get that spotlight to those that, you know, really don't have an opportunity to do so for themselves.
Oh, thanks so much. That's a great summary of your work. Can you talk a little bit about Sabor and Sabor? You know, you mentioned your good friend who you're kind of motivated by. You know, this is, you know, his situation is motivating you. What do you can you tell us a little bit more about what you hope to accomplish with your music when it comes to him? And maybe talk a little bit about the song that you just wrote. And yeah, if you're willing, maybe give us, you know, a few bars.
Okay. You know, when I first started doing my music and recording, I started recording in 2018 with Michael Betts, who is a great friend of mine, but someone who I met through a program I'm involved with called Hidden Voices, which is led by Lyndon Harris. And, you know, through working with Hidden Voices is that we were doing monologues that we recorded over the phone. And, you know, from a process of me recording those monologues is that, you know, I had a thought. I said, well, man, you know, I've been locked up for so long, I've never had an opportunity to record any of my rhymes. So I wanted to do that. So I reached out to Michael Betts. He agreed to record me. And once I got this idea of recording music, is that, as I mentioned, it just kind of evolved. So one day, I'm sure many of y'all might be aware of Dreamville, which is, you know, J. Cole's, you know, annual hip-hop festival here in Raleigh. Well, when he had the first Dreamville in 2020 or 2019, I think. Yeah, I think it was 2019. When he did Dreamville, is me and Sabor, you know, Dreamville is at Dorothea Dix Park, which is literally right across the street from Central Prison. So, you know, Sabor and I, who's a good friend, who's, you know, my best friend here on death row and who's actually innocent, is that we were kind of like trying to hear to see if we might could hear them in warm-ups or rehearsals or anything before they do the show. So we was kind of outside just kind of listening when we did our outside recreation. And then we was in a cell one day and just like looking out the window, maybe hoping that we might see some fireworks go up in the sky or something that, you know, would give us some type of visual of what was going on at the festival. And while we were there, it just, a thought just came to me. It just inspired me at that particular moment as we was looking out that window. And I said, you know, Sabor, I said, man, right across the street, you know, they having the Dreamville Festival. And I said, and it's supposed to be, I think it ended up being like 40,000 people that attended. And I said, and not one of them knows that right across the street, there's an innocent man who's living a nightmare. And when I said it, it just kind of like just came right out naturally. As I said, you know, the next time they have a Dreamville Festival, I'm going to make sure they're saying your name and my name from that stage. And I just became inspired that moment from, you know, just the notion, the audacity of, hey, if I can create my music and somehow get it to generate some attention, then, you know, that attention then could be helpful to support. At that time, most of my music I had written for years had been all about myself. As I mentioned, it was therapeutic. And I didn't envision, hey, you know, the best idea maybe is just to write a song about Sabor and about his experience, his life, his actual innocence and his situation that he's dealing with. So it took a little time for me to actually catch up in thought with putting that to a creative platform. But just recently, as I was inspired to write a song about Sabor, about his case, which is called Rise with a Purpose. And I just recorded it about maybe 2 weeks ago with my producer, Nate Neutrons, who's a phenomenal producer, by the way, and who has, you know, completely just mastered the process of recording over the phone and has been able to do wonders with my voice to, you know, mask in some capacity the fact that it's a phone-recorded vocal. And so I'm inspired about this new song, Rise With a Purpose, And the hope is that, you know, we can bring people's awareness to the fact of who Sabor is, the fact that he's innocent, and the fact that he's on death row in North Carolina, with the hopes of generating some type of, you know, legal defense fund where he may can get some attorneys that, you know, really push behind his case, get him in the courtroom, hopefully win his release, and have him exonerated.
Thanks. I'd like to hear, I mean, I didn't ask you this before, so I'm putting you on the spot, but would you mind sharing a little bit of the song?
Yeah, you did ask me that before. I kind of tried to sidestep it, right? Only for the fact that, you know, unfortunately it isn't a song that I have memorized right now, so I don't have the lyrics in front of me.
I got it.
So, you know, I couldn't give it the oomph that it deserves.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to let you off the hook just yet, though. Because I'm not going to push you on that song, but we are going to listen to Live on Death Row. But it's always really powerful to hear, live performance. And I'm wondering if there's any verse or just a few bars you might want to share with the students. And if not, I will have to rap. and no one wants that.
Okay. All right. I could share. There's a song that I did write, actually, and I mentioned Sabor by his, birth name, which is Stacy Tyler. And I mentioned him in a song that I wrote called Unbreakable. And I can, recite, a portion of the second verse, which is relevant to, my goals and what I'm trying to do. So here goes. And this is a cappella, so hopefully y'all can find a rhythm and just rock with me. So the verse becomes, it goes, okay, now let's go. Most of y'all probably didn't know the city's namesake was on death row. Two chops from the axe blow, completely severed his head. So who better fit to represent my city? Sir Walter's back from the dead, and I made a vow when I swear to God I'm going to keep on speaking that truth. And shine light on this dark plight, and those executed like poof. My man Henry did 30 years before the system ever found proof of his innocence, and then set him free after robbing him of his youth. So I looked around and started thinking outward how to use my voice to start speaking louder for those innocent and still in the trench, like Stacy Tyler and Orico Fowler. Stacy Tyler, Orico Fowler, say them names and repeat them louder, and I pray to God that they get relief before God judge in that final hour. So I just stop on that right there. But
I couldn't hear you. There's thunderous applause. Thank you for sharing that. I am keeping an eye on the time. We have a little bit more time. Thank you for sharing that. And people do have access to the SoundCloud page, though I do realize that a lot of the final versions aren't on there yet. Can you talk just a little bit about how you mentioned this, but what are the challenges that that you face in terms of getting your music out into the world? You mentioned the phone.
It's a huge challenge. As I mentioned, that was the number one hurdle that I faced for years, is that, I'm able to write, but I've never able to listen to any music unless I was listening to the radio, because we have never had access to music outside of these walls. So, we have an AM, FM radio. That's it. No cassette tape, no CD player, no MP3 player, no other access to music or technology whatsoever in the entire 29 years of my imprisonment. So, and I've had no access to recording devices. So my writing is just horse.
You have 60 seconds remaining.
My writing has always just been rhythmic from, beats or rhythms that I produce from within. Then I just have written the lyrics to it. So that was the number one obstacle of just getting recorded. So as I said, it was actually in 2016 when I met Michael Betts through Hidden Voices. But the process of thought started generating in 2018. That's when I reached out to him with the idea of saying, hey, can we record some of my lyrics? And we were just doing it a cappella.
You have 30 seconds remaining.
So, hey, Mark, I'll try to call you back real quick, all right?
Okay, great. Okay, I'll talk to you in a second. He'll call back. You've gotten calls before, right? So you're used to hearing that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Let me just say one thing. Does So you guys remember, the book that you're reading right here right now is published by, edited by Lyndon Harris, and that was a project through the organization called Hidden Voices, which is the one that Braxton is mentioning. And then on the Tassie Castillo book called Crimson Letters, his name is listed as Michael Braxton, and Lyle May is one of the authors of that as well.
Hold on a second, why is it not?
An inmate at Central Prison. This call will be monitored and recorded. For customer assistance, collection, or complaint procedures, or to block future calls, dial 1-866-230. Thank you for using Global Tel Link.
Hello.
Hey, Aileen. Go ahead. Continue with what you were saying about recording.
Yeah, so as I was mentioning, is that the first thing is when I was able to get with Michael Betts is that we were actually just able to record my lyrics in a cappella. There was no beat, there was no timing, and I learned a lot in the process. You know, that, you know, as humans, we have our own internal rhythm. So sometimes that rhythm isn't according to measured time, you know, of a recorded, you know, track that's, you know, in perfect time. So a lot of my rhymes, they were just, you know, fluid, a cappella. And, you know, we did a song I wrote called Rough Raleigh, because I'm from Raleigh. I was, you know, raised in Raleigh, lived in Raleigh all my life. And so I did a song that was just an ode to my city called Rough Raleigh that I recorded a cappella. And Michael recorded it and put it on SoundCloud for me and shared it on Facebook with some people that were my friends that knew me. And I think within like 2 or 3 days that, you know, we had like 100 people, you know, that responded and said it was fire and they liked it. To me, that was phenomenal. It was the huge, the largest audience until today, you know, saying that I had ever performed in front of. So, you know, I just felt like, you know, a huge sense of validation, because a lot of times, you know, as an MC and in here, is that, you know, I had this dream, this hope, this belief that, you know, had I not been in prison, had the circumstances been different, you know, that I might have could have been a recording artist, and that I might have could have been the next Jay-Z, or, you know, whoever the, you know, greatest rapper of all time might be. Is that, you know, in my dreams and aspirations, is that I wanted to sometime be validated for my ability. And, you know, it was kind of scary to start recording, because, you know, you can have that bubble bust. You can have that, you know, that you ain't that good, and, you know, it's just all in your head, and so forth and so on. So to receive that validation from like 100 people initially, it was extremely motivating and encouraging. So we kept recording, doing a song about every week or two. And eventually, is I ended up meeting some people that, you know, tried to record me over the phone and use beats. It was a very difficult process. It didn't work. And finally, you know, I met Mark. You know, I've seen him in the newspaper. News and Observer here in Raleigh had done an article about him and his work with the Beat Lab at UNC. And, you know, working with producers and teaching young kids how to make beats. And I said, hey, you know, I'm going to write this guy and, you know, see if he might can introduce me to a producer that might can help me make beats. And that was the first thing that really opened the door and gave me a platform, because through Mark, you know, he wrote me back after about a month and, you know, we began the process of communicating, and he introduced me to my producer, Nick Neutrons. And, you know, that kind of, you know, opened up another, you know, level of opportunity for me. But it was still difficult because, as I said, I couldn't hear beats. That was the main obstacle. So, you know, my rapping a cappella wasn't in time. But through, you know, just skillful, artful contemplation, I seen on the news one day or watching TV, and I seen these commercials about Zoom, and a light bulb went off in my head, and I said, I wonder if we can use Zoom to, you know, let me hear the beats while I rap. And I pitched it to my team, and, you know, they said, yeah, we can do it like that. And, you know, it's been, you know, forward motion ever since.
Yeah, I mean, I still marvel that you came up with that solution. As you might gather, Aleem has been in prison for the last 29 years and has never been on the internet. And yet he figured out how Zoom might be able to be used to do multi-track recording. So definitely was a kind of team effort. I wonder, let me just see, I have more questions, but while we have Aleem, I don't know when he's going to have to go, but does anyone here want to ask a question of him? Okay, go ahead. Actually, I'll come up to you.
Yeah, hi. I was curious if you've ever heard a song of yours on the radio, whether it be a local radio or elsewhere.
Oh my God, yes. That's been like, you know, just unbelievable. Yeah, the first time I heard my song on radio, I heard Live on Death Row. They played it on a local radio station here, 97.9, or called Hot 97, the new 97. And they played my song. I wrote it on the calendar. I probably will never forget it. It was October the 1st, I'm pretty sure. And yeah, they, of 2021. So yeah, they played it for the first time on 97.9. And then we got also a local radio station here, WKNC, which is NC State, North Carolina State University's radio station. And they do a local segment here where they play local artists. And, you know, I was able to, you know, have my team get in contact with the local DJ in here. And he's, you know, been willing to play several of my songs. And, you know, as well as giving me some exclusive opportunities to hear my music so that I can, because that's been another challenge and an obstacle, is that although I record over the phone, is that I don't have an opportunity to hear the playback and how it would sound unfiltered through the phone. You know, of course, with this telephone, if, you know, if music was played, it's going to come through the medium of, you know, a landline and all of the, you know, obstacles that, you know, you have to come through with a prison phone. But I, you know, was able to listen to my music on the radio, and that was just, like, mind-blowing. And several of the guys up in here heard it, and it was just, like, you know, a huge celebration because it was an accomplishment. It's something that had never been done before.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much. Just a quick follow-up, and I want to see if there are other questions. Can you tell us more about the reception of your music on Death Row? What are you hearing from people?
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of people, you know, love what we're doing. We got a spot on CBS 17 News here in Raleigh, and, you know, they did a segment on us and what we, and you know, the project that we're working on. So that was like, for the first time, some of the favorable coverage that, you know, anyone on Death Row has gotten in many, many years. I mean, in the past, there have been, you know, interviews or, you know, features dealing with Death Row or inmate on Death Row that have just been very poor reflections and, you know, have left sour taste in the mouth of a lot of the Death Row prisoners here. So to have some coverage that was extremely positive and represented us in a way that, you know, not only, you know, displayed our humanity, but also showed that, hey, you know, there's people on Death Row that are still trying to do something positive and put good things out into the world, was something that was, you know, extremely motivating for a lot of my peers. A lot of people, you know, love the song, love the music, and there's other rappers and other musicians here that have abilities and talents as well that, you know, see a door opening for themselves to also be able to pursue dreams that, you know, they may have bottled up or, you know, thought were impossible to accomplish.
Thanks, Aline. Are there any other questions? Okay, I'm going to get a question from a student here.
Hi there. So I'm also a big hip-hop fan. I was just kind of curious, how did you develop, like, your style of rapping? Did you take, like, creative inspiration from other rappers?
It was kind of difficult to hear. Could you repeat what he said, Mark?
Yes. So, yeah, it's a good question. How did you develop your craft? Are you inspired by particular artists?
Oh, yeah, man. Oh man. The inspiration. I'm, you know, as I said, I started rapping in 86. So, you know, at that time, LL Cool J was like, you know, the biggest, baddest rapper on earth at that time. So he was definitely one of my original inspirations. But before him, you know, I loved the Fat Boys. Eventually, it was KRS-One and Rakim, and then as more complex lyrics, you know, became into play, Nas and, you know, Biggie and, you know, rappers from that era, primarily the 90s, and of course, Jay-Z. My greatest inspirations have been Ice Cube, Snoop Dogg, Jay-Z, KRS-One, and, you know, rappers, you know, such as those. So, yeah, I mean, and it's funny because a lot of times when I rap and I write rhymes, it's that I might feel like I'm channeling some of those artists and nobody else hears it. You know what I'm saying? It just sounds like some original rap to them. But I feel like, man, I'm sounding like Jay-Z on this. Or I'm sounding like, you know, Nas. Or I'm sounding like, you know, Biggie or whoever, right? And they like, nah, you sounded like Rome Alone. So, yeah, those definitely have been many inspirations.
Yep. Thanks. What do you think about some of the artists that are popular today?
Oh yeah, I mean, I love hip hop. I see the continuity of it. You know, of course, you know, some of the music that is out today doesn't sound like the music that I began listening to, you know, in the early 80s. But because I've been a fan and, you know, also an artist throughout that entire spectrum, is that I see how the art has evolved in many ways. I mean, if you go back and listen to Sugar Hill Gang, you know, the first record that Sugar Hill made, you know, that's rudimentary, what I kind of call Cat in the Hat rap, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, the rhyme schemes are very simple. You know, a bar might end with a one-syllable rhyme like cat, and then the next bar ends with another syllable like hat. But now, you know, rappers have, you know, evolved, you know, so complex with rhyme schemes, and even to the day of putting harmony in the flow, you know what I'm saying? So it mixes some, you know, R&B or some harmonic, melodic, you know, rhythm, you know, kind of reminiscent to me to some of Bone Thugs being innovators in that lane. And, you know, just a lot of, you know, flexing or, you know, flossing or, you know, just stretching the boundaries of music. And, of course, the use of technology, you know, that's one of the things, is that hip-hop has always been innovative and taken, you know, initially two turntables, taking two of the same records and making a, you know, a continual loop of that, of the breakbeat. And, you know, so to, and to turn a turntable and a record into an instrument, you know, was something that was innovative. And now, you know, still to this day is that, you know, technology is being used to, you know, almost where everyone has the ability to have a home studio right on their laptop. So, you know, I just love the way that the music continues to evolve, that more people are able to create music. Of course, it becomes kind of saturated and make it difficult for artists to break. But, I mean, I love the music. I'm a fan.
Thanks. I want to, I'm keeping an eye on the time. You're probably going to have to go after this segment. But one thing that that comes up a lot in the letters that you send me is the connection that you see between the criminal system, the death penalty, and the institution of slavery. And I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how, why you make that connection and why you see that is a relevant comparison to make.
Absolutely, it's relevant. You know, the 13th Amendment, you know, continued to protect slavery as an institution. You know, it just codified it in the term of imprisonment. But, you know, there's a continuity in slavery and it's, and in current day imprisonment. There's no difference in actual, you know, practice, because both of them are, you know, the losses of freedom. The only context is that, you know, imprisonment is, of course, postured in the context as a punishment for a crime. But something that I mention and I ask people all the time is that, you know, would there have been or does anybody find any justification for slavery? If the Africans that were brought to America, you know, in the 14, 15, 1600s, if these Africans had been convicted of a crime in Africa, would that have justified enslaving them in prison or enslaving them in America? You know, slavery was a private institution, but now, today, imprisonment is a public or state-owned institution. And, you know, there is some still private prison capacities in today's form of imprisonment, but you know, also is that it's very, you know, industrialized. You know, prisoners are almost like commodities, as far as, like, you know, for instance, I got to pay exorbitant rates just to make a phone call, and you know, the canteen prices and things of that nature. So, you know, it's an ongoing, you know, connection between the history of slavery and, you know, imprisonment today is punishment for a crime. I do believe that, you know, of course, that, you know, a person that commits a crime, there should be punishment for them. But I just don't think that people, on average, think outside of the box and say, hey, what other alternatives are there to punishment for crime except slavery? Because, you know, we might not want to use that word, but that's in essence, that is exactly what imprisoning people is. It's the deprivation of freedom, it's forced labor, and it's, you know, separation from people, from their families, and so forth and so on, for, you know, years, and then sometimes, in some situations, for life. So, with that, Mark, I am going to have to go, because I'm getting a signal.
Okay, thank you so much. Can everyone just say thanks to Aline?
Thank you.
Sorry, what was that?
You have 60 seconds remaining.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed this talk and this opportunity.
Thanks a lot, Aleem. I'll talk to you later.
All right, Mark. Peace.
Peace. Do you want to say something?
Do people have questions for Professor Katz? I know these phone calls are really take some time to sink in, so let's just let it sink in. But while Professor Katz is here, maybe there could be some questions. Go ahead.
How did you first get in touch with Ellen? How did that connection start to form in history of that?
Okay, thanks. The question was about how my relationship with Aline came about. He mentioned this briefly, but there was a couple of years ago, it was summer 2019, there was an article that came out in the